The true fact of the matter is, if you don't build a culture that is inclusive of people with disabilities, you're cutting out a part of the workforce that could work for you. And workforce and pipeline issues are so real right now. So not only is it the right thing to do, but, you know, why would you want to not welcome in folks who might otherwise, if you weren't inclusive, they're not going to be able to be on your staff, and then you'll be at a loss.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. The future of associations will depend on how well we adapt, not just with technology, but with people and culture. Our guest today, Wendy Jo Toyama, is a seasoned CEO and the leader of the American Epilepsy Society. Wendy has spent over 25 years helping associations create workplaces that value creativity, equity, and belonging. Her trailblazing work has been honored with numerous awards from the Association Forum and from ASAE. In our conversation, we discuss building diverse and future-ready organizations. We also talk about hybrid work teams and ideas for sparking innovation within any association. I've learned a lot from speaking with Wendy Jo, and I know you will too, so let's dive right in. Wendy, welcome to the Association Advisor Podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you as a guest today. So let's get right into it. I mean, one of the themes we're going to talk about today is creating a culture that works. Mm-hmm. So you talked before about culture, not just being a soft skill, but it's strategy. What do you think are the key elements of a successful workplace culture? We all struggle with this.
We do. I think the first thing, though, is I'm glad you asked the question, because there's culture whether you create it intentionally or not, right?
So I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. So just the idea that we want to be intentional around culture is powerful. You know, I lead with my values of creativity, courage, service, justice, and family. And that really kind of guides my strategy in thinking about leadership and how to create a culture at an organization. I was talking to someone recently, and I think one of the first things people have to have as you do culture work is a feeling of safety, mm-hmm. right? I think they have to feel safe in the environment. And then I think you can build on that to grow a sense of belonging with folks as you try to create this intentional culture.
Yeah, no, and that really resonates. In fact, on a recent episode of the Association Advisor with Tamisha, we were talking about this, and she said creating psychological safety is so important. And as leaders and CEOs, it's really our job to do that.
It is. And I think that has moved up in importance as DEI comes under fire. I think as we're kind of dealing with this work environment that's been shifting since the pandemic. And then there's a lot of uncertainty out there right now, particularly for folks in DC. You know, it's just a lot of people are out of jobs or on furlough. And yeah. I just think safety and well-being have moved up that list mm-hmm. of things we really need to be working on.
Wendy, as you know, there's been a lot of conversation around the topic of in-office remote. We're long past the pandemic, but I really want to know where AES has landed with your policy around this.
Oh, this is so interesting. Prior to the pandemic, so I'm still in my first year. I think you know that, Christine. But yeah. Prior to the pandemic, AES had moved to a flexible work environment, which I think is so powerful. And it was really utilizing foresight to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Because what it meant was during the pandemic, they were all equipped from a technology standpoint to embrace that. So what we have is an interesting workforce where a third of us are in different states. And I think the power of that is it allows us to be able to really compete and get the best talent in wherever they may be, with some limitations on certain states, but still, you know, it's great in that regard. And then we have the folks who are in Illinois can choose if they want to come into the office or not. So we have about a third who come in 1 to 3 days a week and another third who rarely come in. And what I like about this is I think it meets people where they are. Obviously, they have to meet certain expectations. It's not a given, it's earned, but I like that. And I don't think we're ever going back to every day in office. I have a girlfriend whose husband is. He's in a financial firm. Maybe some folks will. But I think in associations, it allows us to find the right match for the role that we need and accommodate folks' demands that they have beyond work. In fact, I think this is why wellness has moved up in the list. Yeah. I think that separating work and home has become harder. And I think if you have someone who's not really succeeding remotely, they're not going to succeed in office either. It's not really a new problem.
I really think that's true, Wendy. I mean, I was fortunate enough to work in an environment that was flexible prior to the pandemic, so it's not a foreign concept. But I know of companies who are also being passive aggressive. I have a real good friend of mine who was told, yes, you can stay remote, but you're not eligible for a promotion.
Oh, wow.
So that's really...
Talk about not creating a safe culture.
Exactly. So, yeah.
No, I think it's going to stay. And I do think there are remnants from this that we have to work on, which ties back into the cultural piece, mm-hmm. right? I think you have to figure out ways to collaborate cross-platform. Yeah. You have to figure out how to get the connections built. And I think that there is sort of a bit of a gap between willingness and desire and execution. So, you know, I saw this with my own group. They're very supportive of each other and have each other's back. And yet when we all go back to where we are, it's real easy to put our heads down and just kind of get the work done.
Yeah.
And so figuring out how do you pop up and like connect with that person right across the cube that's now, you know, five states away. So we have to think about that. So we're starting to have coffees, virtual coffees. Mm-hmm. We had our first in-person staff retreat since I've been on board, you know, just things like that. But
yeah, I'm curious if you do things like that, because one of the challenges, there are some things that lend itself to in-person type of,
yes.
you know, communication, yeah. team building. So do you advocate for that or allow for that as well?
Yeah, I think that there are a few things like my events team who book a lot of meetings here in Chicago for our board and stuff. That leader wanted to bring her staff in, mm-hmm. and she thought it was really important that they get to see the landscape and stuff around our building. And I said, yeah, I supported that. That made sense. So I think there are instances like that. Yeah. I also started on the third Thursday of the month, I'm buying lunch for the team. Nice. So we called it Chomp and Chat. And, you know, again, I kind of want to get people to come in and have fun with each other informally. So we're doing that. And I think that on the staff retreat, we had an agenda. I was looking that up before the call. I talked about character, and then we celebrated accomplishments, which was nice to do in person. We talked about communication. We talked about execution, plan, do, study, act, empowerment, relationships, and then difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. And some of those topics lent themselves more to an in-person retreat than an hour on Zoom, you know?
That's great. No, yeah. And that's helpful for others too, when you're trying to figure out that right balance. Wendy, let's pivot to another topic. You've been a champion for diversity, equity, inclusion throughout your career. There's a lot of pressure on that right now, as we know. So tell me how you see DEI evolving into the future, specific within the association space.
Yeah, I was so glad you asked this question, Christine, because this is something I've been passionate about since the 90s. You know, I was talking to someone recently who said, you know, DEI, which was kind of a new thing. And I'm like, yeah, not so new, but okay. And I think we're all focused on kind of what's happening now and the setbacks that we're facing. And, you know, so I thought about a quote and I kind of looked it up before I came. But it was Theodore Parker, I guess, who's an abolitionist in 1853. And he said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Mm-hmm. And you might be more familiar with this from Martin Luther King, who said, the arc of history is long and it bends towards justice. So I think for us, we're in the long game here. And I think everyone's trying to think about what does that mean? What does it look like? And some of it is moving from, you know, from what we've been doing, which is more of a awareness to accountability, right? And thinking about how can we build system design, systemic things that will help us embed equity into everything we do and inclusion. So I think we're at a point where we were thinking already about how to pivot this work probably prior to the current administration. And now we really have to think about it differently. And I think that's okay.
And to your point, Wendy, I mean, for me personally, I was always focused on inclusion as a leader and as a human, right? It's how you operate. And I almost think the labeling of it all is what got things so ignited. But yeah, I agree with what you said. It's we're in this for the long game, and it's not any administration could come in with their policies at any time, but we have to be able to be flexible, adaptable, and not steer away from the core values that are innate within us.
I want to clarify, when I said thinking about how to approach it differently is okay, I was not trying to imply that what is going on right now is okay.
Oh, yeah,
I think many people who feel scared in ways they haven't recently, who feel not seen or not valued, and that is not okay.
No, it's never okay.
What I'm saying is that thinking about how to approach it differently is essential. We have to do that.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think many of us are united in that thinking. And it's about creativity and making sure that things like our funding doesn't get stripped away or whatever because of the topics and the terminology, but not the behaviors itself. So I think that's important. Let's talk about accessibility and neurodiversity. So tell me a little bit about your thinking on these issues and more importantly, how they contribute to a successful workforce and membership base.
Yeah, I think for me, having done diversity work for so long, I identify as Asian, I'm Japanese American. And as I said, I've been working on this since the 90s at Tribune. I'm not sure that through that entire time, I thought about disability and how we need to move from a compliance culture to a welcoming culture around disability. And I was interviewed for an article with CEO Update, maybe, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And through that, got connected with some folks in the space doing work in this area. And I realized how far behind associations are in building an inclusive culture for people with disability. And I learned that if you have intersectionality, so if you're disabled and potentially a woman or disabled and a person of color, you might actually closet or hide the disability so you can't show up. So that was really interesting for me. So I think, you know, raising awareness around the fact that this is an area we need to get better. It's now being discussed. I think associations are looking at this more. And the true fact of the matter is, if you don't build the culture that is inclusive of people with disabilities, you're cutting out a part of the workforce that could work for you. And workforce and pipeline issues are so real right now. So not only is it the right thing to do, but, you know, why would you want to not welcome in folks who might otherwise, if you weren't inclusive, they're not going to be able to be on your staff and then you'll be at a loss. So I think there's a real important reason to be doing this. And, you know, for neurodiversity, that's something that we've been working on at ASAE. I chair the research committee there. Really excited to think about and work with other orgs to think about how to build neurodiversity into meeting culture as an example. And I'm running into CBBs now, too, who are trying to build specialties around this. So I think we're making some progress, but we have a long way to go.
You know, and to your point there, Wendy Jo, it's I have found that people with disabilities have to be so much more tenacious, creative, solution and problem solving that, to your point, why wouldn't you want that as a seat at your table? Because they have a lot to offer. I love that conversation and thinking differently about, you know, how we approach that and be more welcoming of those individuals. So that's great. Now, before you became the CEO at AES, you led other associations related to palliative care, hospice, dentistry. Talk a little bit about the lessons perhaps you've learned from the healthcare space that can be applied to associations in general, more broadly.
You know, I really love this question. And I thought a lot about the different organizations I've been involved with. I'm going to start with ACPA. It's the American Cleft Palate and Craniofacial Association. And it's an interdisciplinary association that the members treat those patients with cleft lip and palate. For those who do not know much about it, you might be in care for up to 18 years. And sometimes people just think it's closing a gap in the lip. But if it involves the palate, it can affect your ability to sleep, eat, breathe, talk, all kinds of things. And so the team includes speech pathologists, plastic surgeons, oral surgeons, orthodontists, nurses, psychosocial. Anyway, so I remember going to my first interdisciplinary team meeting and sitting there and watching and listening to the interdisciplinary team talk about one child and what needed to happen and coordinate all that for them. And I had a chill go up my spine, you know, just thinking about this is how medicine should be practiced. And I think my lesson there is the importance of collaboration and teamwork and especially collaboration and teamwork across differences.
Yeah.
So I think that was something I learned at ACPA. When I think about my time with hospice, it's really funny. There's something called a hospice pause. I don't know if you've heard of this.
No, I have not.
I believe it's 7 seconds. So we're going to pause for 7 seconds.
Okay.
So that's kind of hard, right?
And I was like, I'm counting quickly too.
I know. And so what I learned is that, you know, pausing is so powerful, particularly in these interactions that happen when you're on a hospice or palliative care team. And so I learned about pausing and empathy and how that, you know, shows up. And again, I think this ties back to creating a safe space. So I think the idea of pausing, we can do that just when we interact, you know, because people want to be seen and heard. And I think you want to listen to understand. And when you do that, you can make better decisions, right? Because you have more information. So I think it works on the human dynamic. But I think this also works when you think about the work that we do. So, you know, a lot of associations, resource constrained, moving fast, not enough people. And it's really hard to sometimes step back and pause and say, is this how we should be doing or what we should be doing? And so, again, I think there's that lesson that you can take not only from the one-on-one interaction, but also from the work, that it's really powerful to bring empathy into the work and to pause.
Yeah. And, you know, just two quick stories or reference points on that. So years ago, so I'm from the Northeast, which means we talk super, super fast and we don't slow down. We don't breathe. Right. And one of my executive coaches said, you know, Christine, what you need to do is whenever you're speaking or engaging, even at home, to your point, when you complete a sentence, do a 2 second, not a seven seconds would be eternity. I think she adapted the New England version, right? Is 2 seconds. And she said it does two things. One, it allows you to give the other person a chance to speak without them feeling like they're interrupting you. Mm-hmm. And two, it allows you to also listen, because you do it in reverse when someone's done speaking, with the intent to listen versus respond, which is very powerful as a communication technique. And one of the things I do with my team is I tell them every week, it's your responsibility to block time in your week for strategic thinking. And you step out of meetings, you step out of the weeds, because if you're not doing that, you're going to get swallowed by the day. And that's not going to make or break your success. It's going to actually make it if you take that time. But if you stay busy in meetings all day, every day, it's going to just swallow you.
You're going to burn out. So I was listening to Joanna Panetta's Association Thrive podcast yesterday, and she had a bunch of podcasters on. And it was funny because, let's see, I think it was Dave Will, from Prop Fuel, who does Association Strong, he was saying he has this expression that he carries with him, which is walk slow and smile more.
Yep.
And I really loved that. I was like, I'm going to steal that from him.
Yeah.
But I like that. And it's the same idea, right? To pause and to bring empathy.
Yeah. I like that. And hopefully people take that away. So the more we can just pause. And I also love just listening. It's work. It's a skill to listen with the intent to listen versus to create your response while you're listening and or interrupt that person. So, and let's pivot. Industry disruption, we're not slowing down, right? We're constantly being faced with different challenges and things thrown in our way. So talk about how an association or how you manage creating agile environments so we can go really quickly and adapt to that change as it hits us.
Yeah, I think there are a few things. I think we've already talked about safety. I think people need to feel safe. I think they need to be empowered to work at the top of their abilities and not feel like they have to check in all the time or, you know, things like that. I also think it's important to have built networks, whether external or internal. I think as a new CEO, one of the most important things to do is to build that network. You do not know when you're going to need to call that person and have a hard conversation or get some advice. But if you've built a network, you can do that much more quickly, right, than starting from scratch. And so one of the things I'm excited about is, as the chair of ASAE's research committee, we're reintroducing 7 measures of success. So we've been working on this for a little bit. And actually this year, we're focusing on agility, that particular measure of agility. And so I'm really excited about it because through the course of the year, we'll do a survey. We'll be talking to leaders. We've already done some town halls. but hopefully it'll result in a topic paper and a case study and some actual tools that will help with this. So I think there's both informal and formal ways to prepare to be agile, right? But it is, to your point, it's essential right now. We can't not be adaptive.
You know, I said this on a different episode, but it applies to this so much so, is that if anything, the pandemic taught us that you have to, because the companies that adapted and just went forward really thrived. The companies that just tried to figure it all out and weren't as quick, they struggled. And some of them actually ended up going out of business, sad to say.
Right.
I can remember at that time, I was managing a media company, and we made our decision to go to virtual events immediately. And our peer group, some of them chose to just stop them. And guess what? We made our numbers.
Right.
We did it differently, but we made our numbers, and that's important. So
I think some of it is about creating that environment where people can try and fail, right? Fail fast, creating a culture where there's feedback, mm-hmm. right? So where people are comfortable asking for feedback and giving feedback.
Yeah.
All these things add to your ability to scale up or pivot or be fast when you need to, but you have to have laid the groundwork for that.
You know, it's funny you just mentioned that, because it reminds me of something we've been talking about too at our leadership discussions, is that oftentimes as leaders, we're afraid to give feedback if it's not positive. And mm-hmm. what you don't realize is you're not helping that person.
You're not
helping them grow. You're not helping them advance their skills. And they might think, hey, everything's okay, when it's really not. And so when you do that, 9 out of 10 times, the person, sometimes they might be taken aback, but they usually will rise to the occasion and make the changes they need and become better. So I think that's great. So this has been a fantastic conversation. I always learn so much from association leaders like yourself, and I'm so excited for you, the award you won earlier in the year, and everything you're doing. So with that, Wendy, can you give our listeners a recommendation on something to read, something that's resonated with you that you want to share with our audience?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm a voracious reader. I'm up to 41 books this year.
Oh, and, my God. You're making me feel bad.
I know. I review them all on Goodreads. So I couldn't pick just one. So I'm going to talk about a few. But probably the nonfiction book I read that applies to work that I've fallen in love with lately is called The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. Mm-hmm. And what I love about this book is it reminds us, to our point earlier, culture isn't something that just happens by accident. We build it, and it's deliberate. It's through trust, belonging, and shared purpose. And it really resonates with me. He shares a story at the beginning about giving kindergartners, MBA students, and engineers marshmallows and noodles to build the tower. And who could build the highest tower? And of course, the kindergartners,
right?
But the reason they did was they didn't have frameworks. They just stood close to each other. So there was proximity. And they poked each other and did stuff and, you know, provided immediate feedback. And so I love that. He also talks about the importance of proximity, which I've been really thinking about with the hybrid office, and the importance of just being close together and what comes from that. So it's a really interesting book. The other one I listened to this year was Atomic Habits by James Clear. And I think they couple nicely together, mm-hmm. because his book is really about change coming from small, repetitive, consistent behaviors mm-hmm. that accumulate, not just these grand acts. So I like that.
Yeah.
And then I have two less conventional books. When I was between jobs and transition, my daughter gave me Twyla Tharp's The Creative Habit, Learn It and Use It for Life.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And so as a former dancer, Twyla Tharp's a choreographer. And as a former dancer, it really spoke to me. And it talked about discipline and preparation and creativity and rituals. And so while it isn't necessarily a business book, I think it's a really interesting one because it sparks some thinking.
Yeah. They don't have to be business books. And by the way, what kind of dance did you do?
I did ballet.
Oh, wow.
Well, and then jazz and tap, you know, because you get into this bunhead studio and you do everything. And then because I tend to read fiction, so I'm going to share what I'm reading right now, which my independent bookseller recommended. I love Kazuo Ishiguro and his books. And so his latest book, The Clair and the Sun, I'm in it right now and I just love it. It's about exploring connection and empathy, kind of in a world where we feel disconnected and alienated, and the importance of human connection. So I just think it really translates well to associations, because that's kind of what you and I do.
Yeah.
is connect people through the work we do, right?
It's all about the committee's advocacy and membership. So it's absolutely,
Yeah. So those are the books.
Well, see, I love this question because most of our guests are really well-studied or read, and you get all kinds of surprises. I've gotten so many great recommendations. It's my favorite part. So thank you for sharing yours. But it goes to show, so similar, my hobby was I rode competitive horseback riding. And when you do ballet or anything like that, it takes discipline. It takes grit. It takes a lot of practice. And that's what those skills actually really serve me well as a leader today. And I'm sure for you, ballet too, you draw upon some of that discipline that it took to be a good ballet dancer, you know, or competitive rider. So,
yeah. And I imagine there's a lot of partnership between the horse and the rider and things that you don't say. So again, that whole teamwork thing.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much. And again, congrats on all your success. And I look forward to formally meeting you at one of the upcoming events. So.
I'm sure we will. I look forward to it a while as well. And thank you for all the great work you're doing in the space. I love the benchmark report, and we need all the help we can get.
We do. So luckily, we have a fantastic team at Naylor who's very committed to this. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. To join our monthly newsletter, go to associationadvisor.com or just click the link in the show notes of this episode. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast so you won't miss an episode. See you next time.